American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town, like a cancer that's silently spreading. There's an unspoken fear, we're on our way down. We must take America back, Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C., before it's too late, there's not long.
That's right, there's not long. We do have to take America back, and we do that from Main Street to Wall Street. Coming to you from deep in the heart of the state of independence, the birthplace of American liberty, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, your Thursday host of National Intel Report live on Republic Broadcasting Network and Liberty Lighthouse on Mojo 50 Radio, WBN 2324 Talk Radio, Patriot Ration Radio, Radio Network. I am Peter Serafine.
A man, a legend,
with a great beard.
With the greatest beard in radio.
This guy is the sweetest, nicest, most gentlest person you've ever met in your life.
The man's really insightful and pretty freaking smart.
With wit, sharp like safety scissors.
I would walk over hot coals for this guy.
Man with a golden voice behind the microphone.
He's got a big, fat, juicy, beautiful brain.
The Nostradamus of political prognostication. Your host, Peter Serafine.
Hey, free speech is not free. So support these free speech networks. Donate if you can. Buy merchandise. Support the network by supporting our sponsors. We need your help. Free speech is not free. That can't be said enough. But I think we need to start tonight's show with probably the biggest piece of breaking news of the week.
The pandemic is over.
Now, so the president has declared the pandemic over, but did I miss where he ended the state of emergency, where he signed an executive order to pull back and stop the national emergency? Because if he hasn't stopped the national emergency, then the pandemic's not over. He still has all of those powers that he swooped up in the last 2 years, all of those emergency declaration powers that we give to our government. Well, our government still has. So he can say the pandemic's over, but until he gives up those powers, I'm not buying it. But that's not what I want to talk about tonight. That was just a biggest bit of news this week, I suppose. And I wanted to talk about Constitution Day. Constitution Day was Saturday, September 17th. And this is the first time I've been on air since Constitution Day. And Constitution Day, in my opinion, needs to be a national holiday. If you disagree with that, if you think for any reason that, no, we don't need Constitution Day as a national holiday, you call the show here and I'll put you on air with me. You can call the phone line 512-248-8252 or toll free 800-313-9443. But the American Constitution is 235 years old. 235 years and 5 days. The average Constitution tried outside of the United States only lasts 15 years. So I think that just by the fact that ours has outlasted every constitution ever tried, that shows that our constitution is remarkable. I mean, by definition, isn't that what that means? It's remarkable. It's done something no other constitution has ever done. So our constitution is remarkable. Now, you may not, or you may, I don't know, remember the little bit of constitutional history training that you got in junior high, maybe. But I don't remember my teachers explaining to me how much they worked on that, how much our founding fathers struggled to reach all of those agreements. It was 4 months of heated debates and compromises before they came up with what is now the U.S. Constitution. 4 months of heated debates and compromises just to draft the Constitution. Then there was another 10 months of more heated debates and demands and arguments before it would be ratified. So all done and told, from the time they started the idea of, hey, let's write a constitution, to the time that we actually had a constitution, was 14 months, was over a year of arguments. Some of those arguments happened right in the newspapers, you know, the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers. And some of those arguments happened in conventions in the 13 colonies, the ratification debates, as they're known. Now, if you ever get the chance, there's a lot of really good information in those ratification debates. So if you get the chance to read those, I highly recommend it. And one of the things that I learned from the ratification debates was that we don't give Patrick Henry enough credit in our country. We just don't. Patrick Henry, probably more than any other single person, is responsible for the fact that we have a Bill of Rights. See, many of the founders, framers, Madison included, didn't want a Bill of Rights for the United States because they feared that if there was a list of rights, that it could not possibly be all-inclusive. Madison argued that, well, he argued in the Federalist Papers and in the ratification debates, he argued that, well, if a power isn't in the Constitution, then our government doesn't have it. So why do you need this Bill of Rights? The Bill of Rights can only cause problems, according to Madison. Fear that a poorly orchestrated Bill of Rights would leave out important rights that our government would then trample on was one of the fears. But Patrick Henry, more than any other person, was responsible for demanding that there was a Bill of Rights before Virginia would ratify the Constitution. Now imagine today without the Bill of Rights. But before you do that, I recently heard one of the best explanations of the Second Amendment that I've ever heard. And it's like 10 years old. Now it's from Penn and Teller. And Mr. Mike, the producer, there's an F-bomb in this little video I'm going to play. I'm going to try to, you know, cover it up. But you get ready with your little censor finger and listen close. But this is Penn and Teller, the magician comedian guys, explaining the Second Amendment like 10 years ago.
Read the words. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Sure, you need an organized military force to defend your country, but the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. This is the people, in contrast with the militia. It doesn't say the right of the militia to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It says the right of the people. Now, why the word people? Because the people who wrote this had just fought a war for 2 years against a tyrannical state militia. They knew the time might come when they'd have to do that again. So they made the possession of weapons a right that the militia could never take away. Now, gun control advocates say the phrasing is clumsy, and the comma separating the state from the people is just a pause to get your breath. Strange, they can't seem to point out any other places where those hack framers put the word in.
So I just love that explanation. I've heard a lot of what people talk about, the different, you know, the different commas and how, you know, the right of the people, and was it the, oh, what was the Supreme Court case about handguns in D.C., where the Supreme Court said that basically everything before the second comma was just, you know, preliminary, throat clearing, peremptory clauses that don't, that aren't the heart of the matter. But Penn and Teller just did it. Like, right. Like, it says, yes, a militia is necessary for a free state, but it's the people that need to have guns. And yet, it's the people that they're trying to take guns away from right now. But just try to imagine today without the Bill of Rights and the blatant, overt, obvious attacks on our Bill of Rights by our own government. It's crazy. You know, another Second Amendment issue. I'm sure you've all heard this. President Biden has repeatedly claimed that when the Second Amendment was written, you couldn't own a cannon. And I have yet to see anybody in mainstream media call him on that, because he's wrong. He's either wrong or he's lying. Because not only could you own cannons in 1791 when the Bill of Rights was written, but you could own a warship. The U.S. government would even would license you and give you permission to own a warship if you want out after our enemies. How many cannons are on warships? Oh, yeah. Dozens, if not scores of them. So, yeah, you could own a cannon when the Second Amendment was written there, Mr. President. Hey, before we move on, two things. One, I do have a guest coming on in the second half of the show. Mr. Joe Templin from Everyday Excellence. And it should be a fun chat, a fun conversation. And with that having saying that and warning you that there will be a guest in the second half of the show, I also have a new sponsor of Liberty Lighthouse. And, well, I want to tell you about them, too. It's Right to Bear
Insurance.
Liberty. And I can't get my little video thing to work right. Right to Bear Insurance. It's that insurance that you need if you're a firearms owner. It's that insurance that, you know, when the guy breaks into your house in the middle of the night and you shoot him before he shoots you, but then you get arrested or he sues you, that's the insurance that is. Now, there's a bunch of different companies out there that do this, but I just found Right to Bear Insurance. And I have to say, it's much more affordable than some of the bigger names that you're probably familiar with that I don't want to mention on air. So if you'd like to learn more, and please do, highly recommend that, go to my website, liberty-lighthouse.com/righttobear, righttobear. Now, moving on. Albert Einstein. I like to do quotes, right? And Albert Einstein said, "The strength of the Constitution lies entirely in the determination of each citizen to defend it." I like to point out the wording of that. It's not determined by the will of the people to defend it, the people at large, the citizenry. The strength of the Constitution lies entirely in the determination of each citizen to defend it. So what do you do to defend the Constitution? Well, I've handed out thousands of pocket constitutions that I paid for out of my own pocket and handed out over the last couple of years since I began this quest, since I realized that our government, well, they hate you, they hate us, and they want to take away our rights. Since I made that connection in my own head, I have literally spent my own money to buy thousands of copies of the Pocket Constitution and handed them out. And it surprises me. It worries me how often I hand it to someone and they say, oh, you know, I've never read that. Or, yeah, I should study that. I really don't know what's in it. So take that back to Albert Einstein. The strength of the Constitution lies entirely in the determination of each citizen to defend it. So what do? Our government is constantly attacking our rights. They're constantly attacking the Constitution. They're even trying to change how we think our own government is structured. Have you noticed the constant tendency to call our government a democracy? They're a threat to our democracy. Well, that can't happen in a democracy. Well, if you read the Constitution and understood it, you would know that, well, our country isn't a democracy. Our country is a representative democracy or a constitutional republic. And just getting people to think that we're a democracy is attacking the Constitution. The more people that think that we are a democracy, the more that they think, well, more people want electric cars than gas cars, so we should just be able to force gas cars. Our government was specifically set up to protect the minority from the majority. See, the evil of a democracy is that 51% can decide what to do with the 49%. I believe it was Ben Franklin who said that a democracy was two wolves and a sheep fighting over what's for dinner. Whereas our constitutional republic is supposed to be those two wolves and a well-armed sheep discussing what's for dinner. We can't allow changes to language that alter the perspective of the founding principles of our government. You have to stand up to that. You and I, that's something that any one of us can do. That's something that all of us can do. We can all correct the use of the word democracy. We can all stop the use of the word democracy when referring to our constitutional republic. We can also stand up against organizations like, I forgot the name of it, I didn't write it down, National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. See, the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact is basically getting individual states to give up their electoral votes for the greater popular vote. So let's say that you live, I live here in Pennsylvania, the state of independence. Let's say that the popular vote for the nation, the overall popular vote for the nation went to candidate A, but my state, Pennsylvania, went entirely to candidate B. Like 95% of the people in the state of Pennsylvania went to candidate B, but candidate A won the popular vote. The National Popular Vote Interstate Compact makes my state legislators ignore my will, ignore the will of the people of their own state, ignore the votes of the people in their own state, and award that state's electoral college votes to the winner of the popular vote, regardless of how the state voted. That's not representative democracy. That's not a constitutional republic. That is not the government that was created by our founders. That's democracy. And we all know that three or four cities in this country, if they were to all vote in one band, would be enough to win the popular vote, right? You get New York, L.A., you know, Miami, and Dallas. Those four populations combined, or maybe Chicago. You combine all those populations together, and it would outnumber the populations of the rest of the country. You got D.C., who votes Democrat all the time. New York votes Democrat all the time. Illinois votes, or Chicago votes Democrat all the time. The National Interstate Compact, the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, would be the end to the Electoral College. The Electoral College would be moot at that point. Your vote in your state wouldn't matter, even to your elected officials in your state. We can all stand up against that, right? Did your state already pass it? Do you know? Are they considering it? That needs to be stopped. That will fundamentally destroy the government that we have in our nation. The other things you can do, you know, that's a group, that's an organization you need to stand up against. There are also organizations that you can support and stand with. There are organizations out there trying to educate people as to what our government means and what the Constitution is and why it's so special. It's, you know, there's organizations, you know, Liberty University, Prager University, the 917 Society, the Constitution Party, a political party, whose entire goal is the U.S. Constitution. The Constitution Party, that's where I'm registered, because the Constitution Party is the only political party I've ever seen that ties every bullet point of their party platform, ties directly back to the Constitution, quotes the Constitution, and explains why their stance is what their stance is in constitutional language, quoting the Founding Fathers. I like the Constitution Party. I like any organization that is standing up for the absolutely remarkable United States Constitution and defending it against the enemies, foreign and domestic, especially the ones in our own government. I look at our Constitution, I look at it through three phases. I think it's, you know, the early years, the progressive movement, and then today. That's how I look at our U.S. Constitution. I don't want to get too far into that with time. Oh, we still got a minute or two. So the early years, 1787, when the Constitution was drafted, until the progressive movement right about the turn of the 20th century. That's what I consider the early years of the United States Constitution. Now, that is over a 100-year period of time. And I think it's important to know how many of the politicians of the day, right up until roughly 1900, stood up for the Constitution, stood up against our own government, because of the Constitution. I got some examples we're going to go over. But, you know, start. My favorite, one of my favorites is 1817. Madison is president. Madison, the guy who penned the Constitution, who was there at all of the ratification debates, who was there during the Constitutional Convention. He's standing as a representative in the House of Representatives and vetoes an infrastructure. Get into more of that right after this break. See you in just a couple of minutes.
Oh. Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of happy packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
People on Earth, can you hear me? Came a voice from the sky on that magical night. And in the colors of a thousand sunsets, they traveled to the world on a silvery light.
Hey, people of the Earth, can you hear me? If you're just joining the show, my name is Peter. I'm the new Thursday host here on the National Intel Report, broadcasting on Republic Broadcasting Network, and also as Liberty Lighthouse on a whole bunch of other free speech networks. The phone line is open this evening. You call in 512-248-8252 or 800-313-9443. And I just left off. I was talking about the three phases of the U.S. Constitution, the early years, the progressive movement, and then today. So let's start with the early years. In 1817, there's a bill in Congress that's called the Internal Improvements Bill. And I misspoke earlier. I said this was when Madison was in the House. I was wrong. This is when Madison was president. Madison is president. Congress passes the Internal Improvements Bill. Infrastructure bill. And when it gets to Madison's desk, Madison vetoes it. And Madison's veto specifically says it's not the federal government's job. It's not in the Constitution. Infrastructure, other than post roads, is not the purview of the United States government, of the general government, I believe was the word he used. Now you go forward another 13 years, and it's 1830 now, and Andrew Jackson is president. And Congress passes the Maysville Road Bill to improve a road. Jackson looks back at Madison's decision, Madison's veto, and says, hey, the guy that wrote the Constitution says that we're not really supposed to be involved in infrastructure, so I'm going to veto it too. So that's two different bills about infrastructure, two different bills that would have laid the foundation for creating a federal Department of Transportation that were vetoed by early presidents. But yet today, we have a federal Department of Transportation. And a recently passed was it $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill? And oh, by the way, just to make sure you realize the impact of $1 trillion, how big a number is that? You say $1 trillion and most people go, yeah, it's a big number. Most of us have a concept of what a million is, right? $1 trillion is a million millions. We just spent that on infrastructure, even though two of our earlier presidents said that that wasn't their job and actually vetoed bills by Congress. Another one? Let's go back even farther. Let's go back to 1794. 1794, Santo Domingo refugees, right? So you got these refugees coming to the United States, and Congress is debating whether or not to spend the equivalent of about $300,000 today to help these refugees. 1794, this is when Madison is in the House of Representatives. Madison stands on the floor of the House and says, I cannot undertake to lay my finger on the article of the Constitution which granted a right of Congress of expending on the objects of benevolence the money of their constituents. Wow! Really? The guy who wrote the Constitution, later as president, says that there's nothing in the Constitution about charity, about benevolence. Our tax money should not be going to benevolence. Well, contrast that to today. How much of your tax money today goes to some form of benevolence? I mean, we've got foreign aid. Heck, we just gave $70 billion to Ukraine for a war that it's kind of iffy whether we should be involved in it at all. I mean, it's pretty muddy. I can see arguments on both sides. But at some point, you got to cut your losses, man. $70 billion. To one country in like what, 5 months? What other benevolent spending do we have? Huh. Well, how much money goes to nonprofit organizations? How much money goes to Planned Parenthood? How much money goes to PBS, to the Smithsonian and other museums? That's all benevolent spending. Social Security. Well, supposed to be our own money that they took from us and held it, you know, in a special trust and then gave it back to us later. But we all know that trust is BS. It doesn't really exist. It's been bankrupt for decades. It's a giant Ponzi scheme. The people paying into Social Security now are paying for the benefits receiving Social Security now. It's never how that was supposed to work. One more example of the early years. 1887, right? I said that I consider the progressive movement to be the middle ground right around the 1900s. So 1887, we're getting pretty close to that progressive line. This is the Texas Seed Act. I've talked about this before. I use this example all the time. I want more presidents like this. This is Grover Cleveland. The Texas Seed Act. So Texas has been through years of droughts and their farmers have just run out of food. They've run out of seeds. They can't plant crops anymore because for the last 2 or 3 years, they keep planting their crops and their crops die because they're drought, no rain. So Texas asked the federal government for money to buy seeds. Okay. Looking at it through modern eyes, that seems reasonable. The federal government gives money to states all the time, but back then they didn't. Back then, the federal government didn't have money to pass out like raids at Mardi Gras parades. So back then, 1887, Grover Cleveland vetoed the Texas Seed Act. Why? Because of Madison's earlier claim that there's nothing in the Constitution about our tax money being spent at the federal level on benevolence. Now, what happened there? You know, a lot of people, you tell that much of the story and they think, oh my goodness, you heartless SOB. How dare you think it's a good thing that that president was willing to let the entire state of Texas starve to death? Well, see, nobody starved. What happened is we, the people, stood up and fixed the problem without our government. The Texans, well, they ran a couple of newspaper ads in a couple of major newspapers throughout the rest of the country, and Americans all over the country started mailing seeds to Texas. They got far more seeds mailed to them out of the benevolence of we the people than they would have been given, would have been able to buy had Grover Cleveland not vetoed that bill and they got that money. They got so many seeds that the Texas government had to take out a second ad in newspapers all over the country saying, oh my God, please stop sending us seeds. See, government never fixes anything. But we the people fix problems all the time, don't we? Okay, so that's the early years. I highlight that as examples of politicians, specifically presidents, willing to stand up against Congress in order to protect the Constitution and what our government is or is not allowed to do. And then comes the progressive movement, or as I like to call it, the beginning of the destruction. Okay, I'm going to give three examples. The 16th, 17th, and 18th Amendments, and I'm going to have to say at least one of those was corrected. So the 16th Amendment, that's the right of the federal government to levy taxes on you and I, the citizens. See, prior to the 16th Amendment, if the federal government needed money, they had to ask the states for it. And what they asked for had to be proportioned based on the population of the states. So each state was honestly paying their fair share. Now, at that time, the federal government really didn't have a whole lot of money. But we still had hospitals and schools. We still had all the services needed at the time. And, by the way, in 1900, citizens paid about 9% of their income to taxes. 9%. You know what the average is today? 35. Now, that's 9% state, you know, local, county, state. There was no federal income tax. 9%. Now it's 35 is the average today. And I would argue that it's closer to 50, because the 35% is the average that you pay in taxes. But what about fees, registrations, and all of those mandated spendings that you don't really see? I bet at least half of your money is going to government at some level. So that was the 16th Amendment. That took the money straight out of your wallet and gave it to the federal government. That was illegal prior to the 16th Amendment. But that's what happened. And then the 17th Amendment. The 17th Amendment at the time was hailed. It was all about more democracy, right? So the 17th Amendment changed how senators were elected. Prior to the 17th Amendment, the Constitution said senators were elected or appointed by their state legislators. After the 17th Amendment, the state elects them by popular vote. So now a senator is basically a glorified member of the House of Representatives, popular vote. What else does that do? Say what you think. It doesn't matter what you think about the democracy side of it. Oh, it's better to have them elected that way. But what happened to who those senators report to? See, before, when a senator would, vote for something that stripped power away from the state governments, the state would recall that senator and get rid of him and put in a new one. But now the state can't do that, because they're popular elected by we, the people of the state. See, the three major elected offices in this country, House of Representatives, members, senators, and presidents, they were all specifically designed to serve different lengths of terms, be elected by using different means. That was part of the balance of power. And the 17th Amendment removed that. Now the states don't really have a way to stand up to our federal government as easily as they did when they had their ability to appoint their own senators. And then the 18th Amendment in 1919, well, that was prohibition. That was an open and brazen attempt to legislate morality from Washington, D.C. And I don't think it's a spoiler to tell you it was a horrible failure. It created the mob. It created organized crime in this country. It made tons of people criminals because people just wouldn't give up their booze. Created all of this crime and all this stuff. And it still stuck around until 1933. When the 21st Amendment repealed. Now look at today again. How much our federal government tries to legislate morality from Washington, D.C. Just doesn't work from that high of a level, from the city on a hill, the far distant capital, whatever you want to call it. You can't legislate morality that disconnected from the people. But they sure tried. All right, before we move on to the today phase of the Constitution and our government and how they deal with this, let's tell you about another new sponsor of the show.
At Romika Designs, we're more than just a laser engraving and specialty design company, much more. I'm Ron Phillips, co-owner of Romika Designs, and we're honored to work with our affiliates like Liberty Lighthouse to bring you professional laser engraving and customization. Great for one-of-a-kind gifts, home decor, business and specialty items, or personalized and logoed designs created just for you or your company. Allow Romika Designs and Liberty Lighthouse to become your go-to gift and specialty project partner. Romika Designs can help make your ideas a reality. We're ready to help you design and create that special gift for any occasion, or engrave your personal or business logo on just about any product. All you have to do is simply email us with your ideas. We specialize in custom design, and we'd be honored to have the opportunity to discuss it with you. Visit us on the web at romikadesigns.com and use promo code Lighthouse during checkout to support Liberty Lighthouse with Peter Serafine.
That's a friend of mine. And Romika Designs is awesome. They, like you said, they can custom engrave and cut and laser engrave just about anything you want. And if they don't have it on their website and you want it, you call them, email them. They'll do whatever you want as long as it's legal. Pretty cool stuff. So check them out. Over in the Twitch chat room, we got somebody who says he's calling himself Jimmy McGill Attorney. He starts out by saying, "Hey, Tommy Chong." I'm guessing that's a comment on my beard. But referring to when I said, you know, we didn't have federal income taxes, he says, we also had no running water, scurvy, and polio. Did that have anything to do with federal tax? No, we had those things because of the time that it was. We still had hospitals. Running water, did the federal government really have much of anything to do with that? I don't think so. Maybe in some instances, but not until much later. Most of the improvements in this country have come at the state and local level, from the private individuals, the private industries. Let's talk about this push right now in the infrastructure bill, where they want to spend however many millions or billions or quadrillions of dollars to put in these electric vehicle charging stations all over the place. Why is that the federal government's job? Spending my tax dollars to put an electric vehicle charging station out there, who's going to benefit most? The companies that sell electric vehicles. So our federal government is picking winners and losers. They're enriching specific private companies that they like, using our tax money. So when the steam engine was replaced by the internal combustion engine, was it the federal government who put gas pumps all over the country? No. It was, I think the first one was done at a pharmacy, because somebody saw a need and said, hey, I can make a buck doing this. It didn't take my tax dollars. Hey, let's go to line one with Rocket from the State of Independence.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, sure. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I was perusing Twitch, and I saw you there.
Okay.
And I am probably a little more left than you are, I would imagine, just from hearing what you're talking about. But you do make a lot of valid points.
Thank you.
Innovation and things like that, sure. Yeah, the government. And then, you know, of course, I'm paying 30% income taxes. And if it was up to me, I'd be paying a lot less.
Okay.
You make good points.
Thank you. I don't feel bad being to my left. Almost everybody is to my left.
Okay. Okay. I don't know if you're open to different subjects, but I'm just thinking about all of these legal implications popping up for the former president. And they just keep coming and coming and coming. They're piling up on one on top of each other. It's like a cavalcade. That's the right word? Cavalcade? Escalation?
Right. I understand what you're saying, but anybody can sue anybody for any time for anything. It's a matter of, can you win?
Yeah.
And thus far, they haven't been able to make anything stick to the guy. So are they just throwing everything at him that they can because they're afraid of him? Or is he really the evil genius that they just can't catch?
Who is they?
Whoever they is filing all the charges and everything. Like, the other side.
We're talking about like legal institutions.
Yeah, whoever's doing it. Like, you've got a DA in Virginia, an attorney general in New York that's doing it. You got the DOJ trying to do stuff. Whoever's in charge of these groups, these organizations, they throw everything at them, but they can't seem to make anything stick. And they've been throwing everything at them that they can for 6 years. So either he's clean or
a lot of
he's
stuff.
An evil genius that they just can't catch.
Yeah, but a lot of this stuff is just in the phases and in the deliberation and preliminary and data. I mean, the last 72 hours, there was this whole, I read about it probably, I don't know, has it been a year or so when I think it was the New Yorker, did a whole section on the ability for someone with massive real estate holdings to inflate or deflate the value of their holdings, depending on what they need assistance with. Like, for example, if you need a loan, you can say, oh, the property I have is worth $500 million. But then when it comes for tax time, you say, "Oh no, I made a mistake. It's only worth $300 million." You know, and you can do that over and over.
And whose fault is that? Is it his fault for taking advantage of a loophole, or is it the fault of the idiots that make the loopholes?
It's not a loophole. It's a question of valuation.
Okay.
And valuation is done. It's not. He doesn't have an advocate. The tax assessment office or the bank that he wants to take money from do not have advocates in the form of in regards to valuation. Valuation is done by a third party who's an independent, objective, and impartial. Right? They just go, "This property is worth so and so. I'm not working for this guy." It's not like a lawyer is an advocate.
Yeah, that's not
valuation of real estate works.
I understand.
It's not one guy.
Got a mortgage. I know how that part works.
Okay, right. So, when you try to manipulate and you try to change the values like that, you're straying into that's unethical for one, and it's possibly illegal.
Okay. Well, if it is illegal, then he'll pay the price.
Yeah.
But if it's not, and it's unethical. Unethical is bad, but it's not illegal. How much of our tax money has been spent going after this guy? With the
people do something wrong. You know, he campaigned as the law and order president, and now it seems like that's just coming back, and now he's hitting up against the law of justice.
That's what you're saying, and that's what the news media is saying, but they haven't got him convicted of crossing the street wrong yet.
Well,
I'm going to withhold my own judgment. I'm going to withhold my own judgment until there's a trial and or conviction. Accusations are accusations. Everybody makes accusations.
Yep.
Biden was accused of being a pedophile. Until there's a court case, I don't know.
Yep.
Hey, I tell you what, I got to keep moving on. I got somebody else on the phone behind you. And I got like four more bullet points I want to get to before the top of the hour, and I bring my guest in.
Right.
But I really appreciate you calling. Thank you very much. Pat in Fort Worth, Texas, on line 3. How are you doing tonight, my dear?
Good. I'm glad you're doing this because I haven't looked it up yet, but it crossed my thought to look it up. They're out there trying to get another constitutional convention right now.
Convention of States Project.
I'll tell you what happened to me one time when I was living at the beach. I wanted a new mortgage because I found out the guy was trying to take my house. And I let a bad mortgage go through. And when I got the new mortgage, I had to get it appraised, right? And the appraisal was wrong. I had to look. He didn't take into account my foot of insulation here, and on and on and on. And I found out he didn't like living at the beach. He was a great appraiser's son, but he didn't like living at the beach. So he decided he was going to take it out on me.
Yeah, the appraiser thing is a little shady to begin with. I mean, it is so very subjective. They pick and choose what comparables they want to use, and it's the evaluation of real estate is it really is a squishy area. And I'm sure there's a lot of ways that you can use that squish to manipulate, like the last caller said, when if you're trying to do your taxes versus trying to go for a loan.
I want you to talk about how close we are to losing the Constitution, because all we need is 34 states calling for a constitutional convention on one subject, and we have 32 on ballots and budget. And so what are we talking about now? Biden spending all the money and the ballots and budget bills didn't work and all that stuff. All we need is two more states. And while we're not looking, guess what could happen?
Right. That's kind of where I'm going next, and I'm running out of time.
The motor voter law, you can have people go in there who don't even speak English.
Right. Yeah, you can.
Okay, thanks.
Good night, Pat. So today there are 440 or more alphabet agencies in our government, authorized by Congress, but they reside in the executive branch. So Article 1 begins with, "All legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in the Congress of the United States." America. doesn't say anything about executive branch agency. Hey, when we come back, right after this break, we're going to have a guest on the line with us, and he's going to talk about everyday exceptions. Be back in just a few.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee that's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie, it works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product, has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Happy Columbus Day. I'm Peter Serafine, and this is today's Liberty Minute. Yes, I said Columbus Day. Christopher Columbus challenged the science of his time and was right. He did not fall off the edge of a flat earth. Instead, he charted the path to the New World, a pioneer worth celebrating. Columbus's daring journey into the unknown should be recognized as proof that science is never settled. Science should always be questioned and challenged, and anyone who says that the science is settled clearly does not understand the basic principles of science itself. Facts can only maintain their factual status if they are routinely questioned and challenged. To be fair, the indigenous people of the Americas deserve celebration too. Maybe there should be a National Indigenous Peoples Day, but it should not replace Columbus Day. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivas Pashem, Parabellum.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.